this one, I can drag out.
265 years ago, today didn't exist. Today is the 5th of September, but there was no 5th of September in 1752. The dates that month went Tuesday the 1st of September, Wednesday the 2nd of September, Thursday the 14th of September. The government's decision to cut 11 days out of history is said to have caused rioting on the streets of London. So why the September gap? It was all to do with this week's topic, calendars. I'm your host, Martin Dickey, and I'm joined by hot date, Harry Whittingham.
Hi there.
Calendar girl, Hazel Sheffield.
Hi.
Day tripper, Sarah Gill.
Hello.
And introducing time bandit, Tony Tasich.
Hi.
So, the September gap, what was the reason? It was the shift between the Julian and the Gregorian calendar. The Julian calendar assumed that the year lasted 365.25 days. The Catholics, under Pope Gregory XIII, worked out that it was 365.24, so it was 11 minutes shorter. So, the 365.24 days in a year was adopted by most of Catholic Europe in 1582, but not by Protestant Europe, the UK being one of those countries, until 1752, when the 11 days were lost. Orthodox Europe was even later, and even then only as a civil calendar. You might know about this, Tony. Russia in 1917, the dawn of the Bolsheviks. Greece, 1922. And Turkey as late as 1927.
I think in some parts of Bosnia they're still using it. Am I allowed to say that?
Of course you are. Yeah.
Diss my own nation straight away. Awesome.
So in places like Bosnia then, the Easter holidays have just been getting earlier and earlier and earlier because that was how they worked it out.
Yeah.
In the 1500s, they suddenly realised that the vernal equinox kept getting earlier and earlier. So it started out as the 21st of March, and then it was slowly over the centuries, over 13 centuries, it was now suddenly at the 10th of March. The Gregorians were like, why does it keep happening earlier and earlier and earlier? So they had to put in place a fix.
Because it was slightly out of sync.
Because it was
slowly but surely it got so far out of sync that they were like, hang on, we've got to fix this.
11 minutes every year out of sync.
It adds up.
It does add up slowly but surely.
It's a parable and procrastination, really. This is why you need to sort your calendars out now.
Well, we think we have sorted them out, but that's the problem with calendars, isn't it? Because we have a year that lasts 365 days. That works for us because the sun comes up and goes down again. But the actual length of time it takes the Earth to
travel around the sun
is 365.24.
Hence a leap year.
Hence the leap year. But the leap year has been in there since Julius Caesar's time.
Interesting.
What we've done to prevent it happening in the future is every year that is divisible by 100 is not a leap year. So, for example, the year 2000 was not a leap year. The year 2100 will not be a leap year. That's how they bring that tiny fraction back into it.
They just managed, they spent all this time making it less and less complicated so everybody could understand it. And then they were like, no, we've got to make this more complicated. So they just came up with, you know, if it's not divisible by this.
Yeah.
I quite like the idea if they just kept it the same and just let the seasons change months a bit, like gradually over time.
Yeah.
That'd be quite fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Another nice offshoot of the 11 days. William Willett of Endon apparently wagered that he could dance non-stop for 12 days and 12 nights. On the evening of September the 2nd, 1752, he started to jig around the village, continued all through the night, but the next morning, September the 14th, by the new calendar, he stopped dancing and he claimed all of his bets.
Clever boy.
Smart man.
How did nobody else know that was going to happen?
I think it's important to stress, though, that no matter how we discuss this, the same things are happening, right? Like, a day is always the cycle between night and day, right?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And a year is always the time it takes to go around the Earth.
It's true, but we have tried to fix a grid on top of what happens in nature. And I think it's something we're going to talk about later on in the episode. But right now, we're going to go to our first song. It's you, Harry. What have you chosen?
I've got Calendar Girl by Neil Sedaka. I love, I love, I love the calendar girl. Each and every day of the year. January, you start the year off.
When you smile, yeah, yeah, my heart's in a whirl.
it's a sweet song saying I love you all the time, every day of the year. A little bit saccharine, and he links every month to his lover in some way. In itself, it's kind of a time capsule of late 50s, early 60s, wholesome sensibilities and straight to the point pop music. Straight to the point in the sense that it goes straight into the chorus and it states the name of the song, like so many songs of that period. Just get straight on with it. It conjures a romantic image of that perfect fusion of utility and aesthetics, which is the now quite old-fashioned but not totally outdated paper wall calendar. It's a bit raunchy, but they're mostly clothed, and that also reflected attitudes of the time and a sort of perceived wholesomeness, though we may look back at them now and think of them as slightly sexist. At the time, society wasn't as overtly sexualized as it is today. But I think single-handedly, Peter Andre's abs in the kind of heavy, glossy colour photo calendars of the last decade or so have slightly readdressed the gender imbalance of old pin-up calendars.
Have you got one, a wall calendar?
I've got four.
What?
Yeah, for some reason I've got four at the moment. But actually, I don't write anything on any of them. I just write on the Sasco year planner, which is massive, all the way down the hallway.
That's in your home, a Sasco wall planner.
It's not as beautiful as Peter Andre's abs, I'll admit, but it's just very, very functional.
Very functional.
Do you have Peter Andre's abs up there as well? Just for a bit of light relief from the wall planner.
Well, we all have, don't we?
Yeah.
Do we know the biggest selling pop star on calendars?
Cliff Richard.
It's Cliff.
Is
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But interestingly, it took a dip a couple of years ago, and I think that coincided with the trouble he was having in the courts. But he is the biggest selling calendar of 2017.
Oh, wow.
This year.
He's been vindicated.
Yeah, but this has been going on for more than a decade. And he's always in the top 10. It dips up and down. He fell out of the top 10 a couple of years ago.
They fell off a cliff of sales, didn't they?
Sales did fall off a cliff.
When he was young people today, they don't use calendars. No. I mean, I'm sure Cliff Richard's still the biggest one because it's just the olds.
Well, no, because the second is Little Mix.
Ooh.
And the third is Justin Biebs.
Oh, hang on, are we not sure that
it goes Cliff Richard, Little Mix, Biebs this year? Oh. That's what the majority of people have got on their wall this year.
But it could just be like sad parents buying things they think their kids will like, which they don't actually because imagine. The kids prefer.
So they all went in the bin immediately.
Mum, I've got a calendar on my phone. I don't use that. Why would I put that on my wall?
Cliff Richard?
Yeah.
Who's he?
Yeah. Oh, you'll love him, darling.
Stop trying to control me. But rounding out this year's top 10 were actually social media stars who are called Joe Sugg and Casper Lee. Anybody?
I've heard of them.
They've got 14 million subscribers for their video blogging on YouTube. And they sold the 10th biggest selling calendar in the UK. Mm. So that's how
YouTube unbelievably out of touch we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What out of the irony? Yeah, bricks and mortar.
And I doubt that could be their parents thinking, oh, well, they'll like that, because the parents are looking at have absolutely that's no idea who they were. Mm. So you've got.
I mean, that was probably true of Cliff Richard once upon a time.
Yeah, once upon a time.
Unless we're talking about teenage parents. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, I've traced wall calendars back some way, and actually they have been around since the 1800s in various guises, mostly hand drawn, and yeah, through the kind of like, you know, the early part of the 20th century. Kind of had pretty people on it, mostly women. But it was actually after Elvis's death that a guy from a company called Danilo asked the estate of Elvis for the rights to 12 images of Elvis. And in 1979, published the first ever Elvis calendar and has released an Elvis calendar ever since. And actually, that is still one of the most successful calendar-making companies.
Okay.
Danilo.
I imagine that might be their Cliff. I imagine the United States.
Yeah.
Biggest selling calendar is probably Elvis. Is that I'm just guessing here. I don't have the facts, but...
But interestingly, even though the Playboy calendar had become quite famous in the 50s, actually, apparently it was this Elvis calendar in 79 which gave rise to a vast swathe of what you'd now call a celebrity calendar. I haven't quite been able to put my finger on exactly when, you know, Animals and Jack Russells and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
It's funny you mention the pin-up calendar as well, because thinking back to the song and Neil Sedaka, my reading of it is slightly different. I don't think it's quite as innocent as you say. He's talking about his girl over every month. I think his girl is the calendar. I think it's appealing to army, away, have a pin-up against the wall. And that's what the love song is too. It's the girl every month in the calendar. This is a wank song.
You can't say that about Sedaka. This is a song that still, according to my research, still gets played every single day of every single year on kind of like golden oldies radio stations. Like, it was a huge number one hit for him in 61. This is a beautiful song. It's cherished by people. It's not a wanking song. That's just your reading.
No, it's not a wanking song. It's a sweet song.
It can be both. There's two levels
Wasn't
here.
Wasn't everything in the 50s really about wanking anyway?
I think so.
Like, it was all that repression and like, it was before the sexual revolution. That was the catalyst for that kind
Absolutely,
of thing.
Absolutely, that's it.
So, you know, everyone was like having to encode their real feelings towards either a particular woman or women in general to a calendar. Because metaphors rule the rage.
So despite the you know, living in the digital age and the fact that everybody can sync every single electronic device they've got with their calendars and everybody else's, actually sales are very steady, especially in North America, of wall calendars.
Yeah.
And apparently once upon a time, a single person could sell 100,000 copies of their image on the year's calendar. And sales are kind of comparable with that overall. But because there's so many more things, you've got music and cars and all the other different things, that actually there's just a lot of choice. And no single person, even Cliff Richard, can't sell 100,000 copies.
I've just realised we're a podcast talking about calendars. We don't have a calendar here with us. We've
got my diary.
Well, everyone get your diaries out, ready for the next song.
I'm going to hang up my diary.
We're going to go to our second song. It's you, Tony. What have you chosen?
The song I picked is Dateline by Gay Dad. What I love about this song is it captures a particular philosophical nuance about the way people do sometimes see the past. And it's like you can go through life for years and years at a time, and sometimes you sit down and you go, wow, yeah, I hadn't thought about that for a while. This was when I was living by myself, really miserable in Warwick Avenue in the flat that leaked, and like it was freezing cold and I was commuting out of London. It's like episodes from your life come up, and this song references little episodes, and it's about like how 1974, 1979, all the kids were cool, I was hot for teacher, all that stuff that happened, underrated year. That particular little lyric always rings with me. It was such an underrated year. I think 2012 was an underrated year. I think they had a particularly passionate opinion about a year that they thought was underrated. And the other thing that obviously is really great about this song is that it has a motorbike switching off at the end, and I just think that's a great way of finishing a song. Because let's face it, when you finish riding your motorbike and you turn the engine off and it kind of goes like that, and you're like, yeah, that's how it feels to be here, now. And all those little moments in the past were like, yeah, that was an underrated year. Yeah, school was out for summer. Yeah, I spent 4.5 weeks playing Transport Tycoon in my pants when I was 15 and when I was 31. But it's cool. We're here now. And that literally, that's one thing about Gay Dad as well that's really great. They just have that sense of being in the here and now. They don't really think very carefully or very deeply.
But they obviously have connections to the past. They've written a song about their favourite years and their favourite moments.
And one of the most pervasive criticisms of Gay Dad is this way that they have of like writing songs about completely meaningless things, and that they aren't very deep and meaningful. And they're very commercial and they're very like cynical.
Yeah, they were a cynically constructed band though, I think, because Cliff Jones was the lead singer and he was a music journalist. And he basically wrote about all these bands, saw them getting successful, and thought he worked out the formula to it. Went to his bank manager and said, I've got this plan. Bank manager said, all right, go for it. So that's why the name Gay Dad, sort of deliberately provocative, and he'd had the whole campaign kind of worked out.
Did they make any money?
Yeah, I think they did pretty well, but there was I think they had quite a lot of backlash in the music press because of the way they were formed and the way they were constructed. I really loved them, to be honest.
So they knew the inner workings of the music industry.
Yeah, and knew how to exploit it.
Manipulate it.
Yeah.
I suppose it's only possible that people were annoyed at it as if they thought that they should inherently have some kind of credibility as a band. Well, they had no history as musicians. It's not like they'd sold out on some other projects to do this very cynically constructed thing, because most music now, in the pop charts at least, that makes a lot of money, is extremely cynically constructed to follow a certain formula, and then you make the certain type of video that's certainly, you know, relevant in a certain way, and people are wearing the certain thing, you get that person to do a collaboration because their star's rising as well, and it's all designed to be like that. So I don't know why people would be annoyed at Gay Dad basically exposing and saying, look, I've got a formula and here it is. But if the music's good and you like it, then what does it matter?
That's the time before all of that, though. I mean, you know, all of this like artifice debate or like sincerity, does it matter if the artist is real? Like, I feel like we're a decade past that at this point. Mm. But I can imagine 20 years ago that was still raging, you know. Yeah. People didn't want a band that had been constructed to sell records.
Yeah.
They wanted, like, the real thing.
I don't know. I kind of think it's a kind of bit of a wave coming up and down. I think maybe they didn't mind constructed stuff a bit more earlier, now there's a lot about authenticity, and there's a lot about it's the same with like going back to the crafting movement and things doing things with your hands and like the rejection of technology. But I mean, like bands like the KLF were pointing this out ages ago. They did that little book, The Manual, which basically said how to have a number one hit. I think they did that Doctor Who song,
Doctor in the TARDIS.
Doctor in the
Do you think we've passed that in a positive way? Do you think we're happy to let performers be performers and artists, or are we still cynical about it? Like, where have we reached?
I don't know. For me, this is going to sound horrendously deep, but it gets into an argument about basically the death of capitalism, and there's no such thing as irony anymore. Like, if you think of something like Nirvana with A Baby Chasing a Dollar, that was a band that was sold to people as countercultural, but really they were just buying into a kind of capitalist narrative. And I think that's, you know, this kind of cynicism, this is how to trick the system, is just an extension of that idea. Mm. I think once you've kind of broken that, you can't really go back and pretend you don't know that it's all a construct. Mm. We know that it's a construct now.
Well, to be fair, like, whenever you do any kind of artistic creation and you construct it, because it's necessarily constructed, you have to build the CDs onto which it's recorded to go to people's houses. Well, back then you certainly did anyway. But, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with sticking two fingers up to people and going, you know, we constructed this, here's how we constructed it, we don't care if you know. You know, that's kind of okay. What always intrigues me is how quickly we jump on people who are actually pretty frank about saying, well, this is a construct. Actually, it's always a construct. No matter the most genuine or authentic sounding musician, if you're listening to them on a piece of plastic one way or another, it's a construct, or even on a download.
That's also what's quite disingenuous and a little bit, it rankles slightly with some people when you have what they call the canonical artists of the rock era. So you have like Phil Collins will come and do an acoustic set stripped back. This is real now. What I'm performing now, what I'm playing is an acoustic guitar. These are my songs stripped back to their honest roots somehow. Well, no, you're still a performer on stage. It's all artifice. If you're on a stage performing, it's artifice. It's a performance. You are a character, a persona. So don't try and strip it back and pretend this is the raw song that we're hearing now. It's not.
Exactly. And with music, it's one of those things where, you know, you have the difference between the recording and the live performance. And often in music, that debate is about those musicians who put in the time playing live that they do recording. You know, so we tend to love those bands that put in the time doing both. Not only do you want to hear their best effort in a kind of sterile, closed-off environment, but you also want to hear them performing at their very best of their ability in an environment where they don't have time to pause and think.
Yeah.
And we criticise those bands that do one but not the other.
Yeah.
And we criticise those bands that rock in one stage and suck in the other stage. Well, Gedad actually rocked in both. So, you know, they had the chops to do it both on record and live. And I think no matter how constructive they say they were, I don't think it's fair to hit them too hard for being fake.
No, I do confirm they were great live. I saw them at V99.
Did you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've seen brilliant videos, but I'm very jealous.
And honest.
I was right at the front. There weren't many people there.
Well, they were all probably complaining about what an artificial show this all
exactly,
was.
Exactly.
Well, it was V99, my God.
Yeah, no.
Can we bring it back to calendars then? Dateline is excellent as a title. What is a calendar if it isn't a date line? And we think about time in a linear form. It's a line of from a beginning to an end.
They're often in a square now, aren't they?
True. Oh my God, what? Two-dimensional?
Date square.
A date.
No, like if you think of a calendar you put on your wall, it's a little square.
No,
I guess because it's practical.
My calendar is a piece of string from one side of the room to the other.
How long would it have to be? That'd be amazing. Imagine a whole year. I'm going to make that calendar.
Yeah. That would be quite nice, actually. You could put it on a roll of tape.
And just keep rolling it out.
What
that sounds great.
How else could you present a calendar other than a grid?
On a sphere?
As a performative dance?
Yeah.
Monday?
Shit.
Sorry, I just want to come back to that earlier question you asked, by the way, because the kind of link to calendars, yeah, I appreciate it, is extremely tenuous. But what I like about this song is that when people see calendars, they think of a routine. We can't really change Monday through Sunday. It happens no matter what we do. But what I like about calendars, the way you can like look at a calendar as a diary in a way. It's a log of what you did. And what's lovely about a calendar is you put things that will happen in the future into the future. They happen and then they're in the past. And Dateline is a song about all those things you didn't really anticipate would be awesome, that you lived through that were really shy. And then when you get to the end of it, you're like, wait, that was fucking awesome. I had no money and I lived in a shoebox, but I had a motorbike. Yeah!
Do you have a motorbike, Tony? You've mentioned motorbikes.
Yes, sorry. I have been moto-wanking, haven't
Getting
I?
Getting back for the motorbike.
Yes!
Why didn't we do motorbikes? We will do motorbikes 1 week and I won't invite you. we're going to move on to track number three. It's you, Hazel. What have you chosen?
I've done LCD Sound System and Other Voices. So that was Other Voices by LCD Sound System. We use calendars to remind us to make big changes in our lives. Veganuary, Dry January, Stoptober, Movember. Each January, I've opened a new diary and relished the promise of the crisp blank pages, wondering what wonders I could achieve running a marathon, writing a book, moving to Berlin. Yet calendars are deceiving. James Murphy, the frontman of LCD Sound System, is a man who knows this. He has frequently written about time running away from him. On All My Friends, he talks about dropping 10 years and wasting 85 days in France. On All I Want, he says, from now on, I'm someone different, no more being predictably lame. I had the pleasure of interviewing him once and we talked about addiction. Unlike other people in the DFA record scene around that time, James Murphy did not get into drugs, but he says at the age of 30, he had a crisis and went to a therapist because his life sucked. He was in a relationship with someone who didn't like him. He quit uni to make music, but he was failing to do that. He didn't have a job. And he told me, my life just sucked in this mediocre way. And when he went to this therapist, she said that he shouldn't just expect to be able to mark a day on the calendar and just suddenly feel better. Instead, he had to make tiny behavioural changes every single day to rewire his brain and prove to himself that he could live differently. So that's what he set about doing. Incrementally, with a lot of hard work, he set himself on a different path. And that's the James Murphy we hear in this song. Waking up, promising to write letters to friends, taking a shower. Time isn't over, time isn't better. That shit's a dictator, he sings. And then Nancy Wang, in her verse, instructs him to push the calendar away. And that's because all the markings on the calendar aren't going to help him get back to writing music after he thought LCD Sound System were done forever. You're just a baby now, he sings. Each time he has to start from the beginning, making tiny changes, working a tiny bit harder to do the work he wants to do. All the calendar markings and resolutions and promises are useless. When Murphy told his friend David Bowie that he might get the band back together, Bowie said, "Does it make you uncomfortable? Good, it should make you uncomfortable." And that's the last line of this song. No save the date could prepare him for the painstakingly daily grind or facing up to his fears about time that went into actually getting his band back together.
Yeah, it was a huge factor in LCD Sound System returning from retirement, his relationship and his conversation with David Bowie.
Mm.
James Murphy had a writing credit, didn't he, on the last David Bowie album, and they became quite close.
Mm.
Who better to inspire you to return to the studio?
If David says it's all right, I think you can safely probably say it's all right. It's probably fine.
Yeah.
But it's interesting his relationship with calendars there, and very interesting what you said there about that. What are people's relationships with calendars? Do people use it as a force for good? Are people slave to their calendar?
I am obsessed by time. Like I've kept a diary since I was 7 or 8.
Wow.
Well, like a feelings diary.
What, non-stop since you were 7 or 8?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
I don't write in it every day. I write in it like whenever I want to. But yeah, I have a record of my life from the time that I was 7 or 8. And like leap years especially were big occasions in my diary. It wasn't necessarily like things that happened in my day, but it was the actual passing of time that I was completely obsessed with.
And how do you find a diary helps you in your day-to-day life? How often do you look back and Has it helped form who you are in a way? As a log of your character and as your personality?
My job is essentially just to take notes on things. And so I have 1,000 notebooks. And actually, I look at them all the time. I love looking at old to-do lists. I love that like sense of satisfaction you get from like looking at old to-do lists. In fact, sometimes I write things that I've already done on my to-do list just so I can cross them off.
I've definitely been there.
Yeah, calendars are great ways for like making you realise, and I think that's kind of a thing with James Murphy too, like calendars are a great way of making you realise the kind of the stuff that you've got done.
There's a big difference though between a diary and a calendar, because I mean I keep my old diaries in terms of the sort of portable calendars in terms of what I was doing, like gigs I've been to, meetings I had, things I was up to, but I did keep a diary when I was much younger and I burnt them all.
That is very dark.
On purpose?
On purpose.
It's very,
because I couldn't bear to see the person that I was humiliated by it to myself.
That's why I've never looked at them.
It's really strange. Yeah. So you must have looked, but I've looked back and I've used the same Hotmail account for 15 years.
Yes.
And yeah, exactly. Well, I'm martindickey@hotmail.com. Why would I relinquish that? I mean, it's one of the few people that have
damn
their
best
own
email address in bed.
Yeah. Please spam this right now. Spam this email address. That was martindickey@hotmail.com.
But I read an old email that I'd written and it just did not sound like me at all. Yeah, it was creepy, so strange. Really creepy. Mm. Are we still the same person? The calendar tells us that we're still the same person and the same skin from that time to this time. Are we the same molecules even?
I don't know. I think it's what we were saying earlier about the grid. Like, we have to impose this grid about time passing in order to understand the fact that once we were this person that wrote those stupid emails, and now we are not that person anymore. But, like, it's kind of artificial.
The sun will rise and the sun will set. And the circadian rhythm that kind of is in your body is naturally attuned to that, you know. Yeah. You feel when it's light outside, and that's what helps you kind of wake up a little bit. And yeah, the day and night cycle. And actually, I read about an Amazonian tribe that have absolutely no concept of time whatsoever. They just have wet seasons and they have dry seasons, and that's it. That's about as much as they care to think about it.
But then I guess the years serve as kind of a reminder, don't they, that something should be happening. So you might be like, oh, this year was dreadful, and you expect the next year, oh, this year's going to be great, and then the year starts and it's not, and you're like, well, actually, that means I've got to change something.
This is exactly what I'm getting at with this song. Like, James Murphy is like, something should change now, something needs to change because everything is bad. And like his therapist says to him, nothing is going to change. You're just going to, like, every day you're going to work a bit harder, and then in 20 years you might look back and be like, oh, okay, slowly I became like a pop superstar. But there's no one moment where his life hinges on a day. It's just like, okay, I have to work really slowly over time. I have to do my wet seasons on my dry seasons, you know, like
it's a lovely context, that kind of incrementated improvement, the way that you kind of go, you know, I'm going to change one little tiny thing about my life. And that actually really does work for people. Mm. People think, you know, I want to be a pop star, but I'm never going to get there because going from there to there, like, all this distance is impossible. But one tiny little change you're thinking, the way you exist, is actually quite a profound thing.
So maybe the calendar isn't a line from A to B, but it's actually like it's steps. It's actually like a stair going up. You're building all the time.
Well, it can be.
But the steps are completely arbitrary. It might be like September 4th, November 10th, and December 17th.
And that doesn't matter. But the calendar is our only link back into our past. Who we are today is totally different. Like my email, and like we've seen from looking into our diaries, our only link into the past is the calendar, and the fact that that's our handwriting, that's proof that we were there before. But who we are today is entirely different.
I would have to entirely disagree based on my song choice, because the way I see it is clearly 1984. That was a great year. Or like, you know, it's like the calendar is one of those things that helps you make that. And it exists, this kind of framework and the kind of like literal conception of time passing in months and things and leap years.
But someone mentioned the word arbitrary there as well, and it is entirely arbitrary. Mm. That arbitrary number, 2017, it's a symbol of globalisation in a way, because we didn't always share the same year together. Only 2017 now has reached almost the entire population. It's become the civil calendar all over the world. But there are still other calendars running. It's not the be all and end all. For example, does anybody know what today's date is in the Muslim calendar?
Oh, darn. My phone was set to remind me that.
Eid.
It is the 14th of Dhul Hijjah, 1438.
So it's the year 1438.
It's the year
1438. Wow.
Which is to be expected because Muhammad came around 500 years after Christ. They're dating it from when Muhammad moved to Medina on the 16th of July, AD 622.
Yes, that's about right then.
The start of the Muslim calendar. What do you think today's date is in the Hebrew calendar?
Earlier, like 3000 or something.
Yeah, good guess. The 14th of Elul, 5777.
Cool.
Now, this one's far trickier to work out. You have a specific date where Muhammad moved to Medina. How do you think they're working out the Hebrew calendar?
Absolutely no idea.
Moses crossing the desert?
No, they're trying to add together all of the descendants of Adam.
Wow!
Their lives. They're making an estimate.
How are they doing that?
That's a better calendar.
A Hebrew scientist estimated that based on all of Adam's descendants all the way through to Jesus Christ in the present day, it was about 4004 BC that Adam was born.
But hang on, they lived like 1,000 years back then, according to the Old Testament. Like, people would live for like 800 years and then like pop it then. So
really?
How did they work all that? Yeah, people would... We have really incredibly short lifespans compared to people in the Old Testament. I'm not even kidding you, seriously. In Genesis, people live for like 900 years and
everything
like...
in Genesis is a metaphor. If someone's living for more than 60 years, it's probably their descendants.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm obviously not going to take it literally. Like, it's like it'd be one of those points where it's like...
You're
best
not to.
This
gets
very confusing.
You're a creationist. Okay, that's another podcast.
But what I like about this is the way that, like, all faiths, like, look for a datum point. This is what I'm sensing here. Like, there's a kind of, like, there's a point where we go, you know, we've laid down the canvas here. It all began at this point. Do we all agree? More or less, let's go. Mm. That's what I kind of like about it. It's like
we need
a cultural datum.
Yeah, an anchor
for things
that
happen.
We need to know the...
feel adrift.
Yeah, we need to know the beginning of something.
But why not go back to the Big Bang? I feel this kind of silly.
Well,
but
that is a calendar.
7 billion 2017. There we go.
If you want to call science a faith, then scientists have worked out their beginning as well. It's 3.5 billion
science
years ago.
Science isn't a faith. Yeah. It's just a science.
That's
it's not
a
about
point,
faith.
Man.
The whole point is it's not about faith.
I completely. But
you have to buy into that.
The Big Bang is just a theory. It is just a belief.
Sure.
It isn't. It
but
isn't
it's got
proven.
Too many noughts on the end, isn't it?
It's, it's inconvenient. It just doesn't fit in the margin.
The Big Bang.
Big Bang.
Is that what you mean?
No, that's not what I meant.
Oh, right, okay.
Also, do you know what the date is in Ethiopia?
No.
It's still 2009 in Ethiopia.
Ah.
And today is the 30th of Nashi.
Oh, okay.
2009.
Oh, I was supposed
They're one of the other nations that are still
what, did you have
using
on?
A different...
Yeah, I've missed my dentist appointment. Anyway. In Ethiopia. We're going to move on to our fourth and final song.
Oh, yeah, that's mine.
It's you... Sarah, what have you chosen?
I've chosen Funny Time of Year by Beth Gibbons and Rustin Mann. Beth Gibbons and Rustin Mann, Funny Time of Year from 2002. And it is a funny time of year. Well, for me at least, I feel like it is. But I think September's a funny time of year for a lot of people. And especially many of us who were educated in the UK or in Europe will associate it with going to school or university. And there's this rhythm of terms and holidays and it continues for so many years. I find it quite difficult to shake that off, that feeling that something new should be beginning in September. At the same time, there's this change in the light and the temperature in September, which all combines to create a really sort of visceral response. And that kind of leaves me feeling emotionally a little bit strange. And there's an odd mixture of excitement at new beginnings combined with nervousness of about what's ahead. And I think a bit of sorrow about the fading light and the sort of loss of summer and fun, relaxed times. And there's also a sort of sense of a bit of a creeping dread, but that's possibly due to the fact that I feel like I might find spiders now in my flat because they all come in to find their mates at this time of year. But anyway, that's my experience. But it's not just September that does this, although for me it's a particularly strong feeling, but dates dotted throughout the calendar become sort of inextricably linked to people or feelings, colours, smells, and especially if we're the kind of person that remembers dates and anniversaries, and I'm really definitely one of those people, and we can suddenly look at the calendar and be reminded of the death of a loved one, a painful breakup, or like a happy memory, or whatever it is, it's really powerful. And in this song, I think Beth Gibbons is singing about winter, but this made me think of all the different meanings that different dates and points along the calendar will have for everyone. So different cultures will have different rhythms to their lives at different times, and everyone, every individual in that culture will have their own emotional calendars within those collective cultural calendars as well. So at any one point, anywhere you are, there'll be someone somewhere nearby or far away that's having some sort of really unseen weird time in their heads, probably because of something that happened in the past that got tied up with this particular date or this time of year. They might not even be conscious of it, or they might just be vaguely aware of a feeling in their stomach or a change in the energy that was triggered by like the way the sun shone through a tree onto the wall of their house or something. And I remember speaking to a friend about, like, she was having a really strange week, and she was like, oh, I'm having this really strange week, like, couldn't work out what it was. And she realised it was the week her dad had gone into hospital and then subsequently died or something. And she hadn't pinpointed it to the date until she knew there was something strange about this time, and then she sort of worked back from there. And so sometimes it's kind of quite unconscious, I think. But I really like the way this song captured the emotion and the sort of strangeness of this, and also in its mentioning of being out of season. I think the line is, the voice of love is so out of season, and out of season is also the name of the album this is from. And it kind of made me think of the emotional disconnect that can sometimes happen, like if your mood somehow doesn't match the season, like if you're depressed in the summer, or if you're like having a fun old time and it's pissing it down or something, and you feel a bit out of sync with the world somehow.
We've seemingly been making a mistake the whole time, and that is talking about the calendar in this very mathematical way. We've been talking about the way the Gregorians started to chart it and the differences in the fractions that change the year. But the calendar really is just the changing of the seasons. It's just the sun going up and coming down. That is a calendar. That's what all calendars in the world are based upon. That's all it is. It's nature.
What else can we base it on?
And that's what you've tapped into.
And it's something very deep that we share with our very, very ancient ancestors. It's something that we still use in, you know, obviously slightly different, but they found examples of calendars from 32,000 years ago, and they've been able to decipher from kind of markings on bones and from cave paintings. And then it meant the same to them as it does to us in that kind of deeper way, without putting too much of a point on what the calendar is supposed to mean for you or what
they saw those bits and pieces are. The same changes in the light and the same changes in temperature and colours and the leaves and everything. That was all the same. Because there's a tendency to look at the past in
because
black and white
changed.
As well.
That's
but that's
never
changed.
Yeah.
But this is what I really liked about what you said as well. Like it really, the way you mentioned, like, you know, the light falling through a tree or something like that, these little tiny mental images we have, the way I think that culture and people, and especially us now, like, we remember our past, our individual past, through like little moments that stack. Like, it's almost like a little Excel spreadsheet where it's like autumn, winter, summer, spring columns. And in each one of those little columns, like, you get a few images you associate with that run through your whole life. So if you were to think about like autumn or spring, I'm imagining that you would probably have a few incidents that would happen under each one. And for your friend that you said that, you know, she said that she was feeling out of sorts, and you know, that she'd connected it to this very emotional event, the death of her father. And that was like, you know, many years back, but at the same time each year. There must be a reason for that. We are at the same point in the orbit of the Earth around the sun. Like, you know, we have this kind of celestial force, a space ley line hitting us, if you will, that we crossed the last time before.
Could it also be that we're taking cues in the same way that a smell can remind you of something? That,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
This is something about all the other stimuli around you.
It all combines to... And,
to make
to
you without realising, without
memory,
necessarily
I mean.
Looking at the calendar, you're like, ah, oh, this is reminding me of, ah, oh, now I know why. Yeah.
And the time of year, the funny time of year that Beth Kim's talking about is going into winter, autumn, winter. I turn to this album, it's so autumnal.
I think
it's almost,
it came out in autumn, actually,
it's
as
almost
well.
Become cliche for that.
There's a lot of imagery about the seasons in the whole... I mean, the album's called Out of Season, and there's lots of things about trees and autumn leaves is one of the other songs. Like, a lot of it's hinged in sort of time and thinking about the past and memory, I think.
And she's Beth Gibbons. She's the vocalist, for people who don't know, of Portishead.
Yes.
And it's a collaboration, a one-off album collaboration with Rustin Man, who is in fact a member of Talk Talk.
Mm.
And unfortunately,
of Life's What You Make It. Life's what you make
it. It's funny how music can be associated with the time of year as well. There are certain types of music that you would listen to in the summer, you would turn to in the summer. We were talking about it last week, weren't we, Hazel, about the song of the summer. Mm. Well, this sort of fits into autumn so well. What is it about the sound of it that sounds autumnal?
People don't celebrate the song of the autumn enough. It's always the song of the summer.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's that upcoming sense of dread. Oh, sorry, it's the upcoming sense of dread that you mentioned that autumn really helps bring about. And actually, it's part of the human condition to enjoy that upcoming sense of dread.
I think it's also the elasticity of time. If you think of autumn and spring as kind of transitory seasons, you know, autumn is on its way to winter, which I suppose is what the dread is about. And summer seems like this kind of halcyon days, like they last much longer than they're supposed to. And we long for it when we don't have it. And yet autumn is this kind of transitory time. And the kind of elasticity of that reminds me of the kind of arbitrary nature of the calendar. It's like we think all these days are the same length, but actually they're not. The days that we remember are much longer than the days that we don't.
Mm.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there's a symbolism of death as well. It's the death of long, hot, sunny days. It's the opposite end of the year to spring, which is the beginning of life where the flowers bloom. And winter signifies death. Autumn is the slow descent into death and
decay.
And Easter coincides perfectly with spring.
With life. So it's life.
For good reason.
It's a symbolise of life. Funny enough, the Romans as well, we haven't spoken much about the months. The Romans, originally, very ancient Romans, only had 10 months. They only had names for 10 months. They didn't even bother naming two winter months.
Seriously? In Italy? What?
Yeah.
The nameless time.
So the first month is March. Mars is month. April, Aphrodite, which is why we call it April. May is Maya's month. June, Juno's month. July is named after Julius Caesar, but it used to be called Quintilis. So that was the first numbered month. August, named after Augustus Caesar. So these are the two emperors who reformed the calendar that added January and February. They thought that was so clever and so brilliant, they renamed month 5 and month 6 after themselves.
Well done, everyone.
So Augustus lends his name to August. That was renamed from Sextilis, which was 6. Then you've obviously got September 7, October 8, November 9, December 10. They've been moved. December is not the 10th month anymore, of course, it's the 12th. We shifted January and February to the start of the year. But for a long time, March was still the beginning of the year. And there is still a remnant of that in the present day. Does anyone know what that might be?
I don't know.
The tax year.
Oh, really?
The tax year is a hangover.
That starts in April.
It starts on 17th. April the 6th. But it used to start on Lady Day, the 25th of March. Those 11 days that we lost in 1752, shifted it to April the 5th.
Oh, right.
The reason they shifted those days was to avoid losing 11 days of tax revenue. So they were really tight-fisted in 1752.
Yeah.
They did the same again just for one day, the next leap year, and that shifted it to the 6th of April, and there it has stayed.
Why don't they just make it the 1st? It's so annoying.
We're going to take it to the vote now. We're going to start with you, Harry, because you went first. Who are you voting for and why?
I am voting for Sarah and Beth Gibbons with Rustin Man. Fantastic song, absolutely brilliant. And as ever, Sarah, your ability to evoke meaning is just captivating again. So I'm voting for you again. I think I always vote for you, but that's all right.
Well, thanks, Harry.
I think you're just good.
Hazel.
I'm also voting for Sarah.
Oh.
Yeah, I just really liked your description. And I also share the feeling that September is the start of something new. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think any month can be the start of something new. And every month is a good month for that. So September it is.
Cheers, Hazel.
Tony.
I'm going to go against the grain and vote for you, Hazel, because I would say that possibly my favourite thing about what you said was this mental image of having, you know, a lot of your past stored up and kept with you for the future. I just enjoy that. But maybe that's because I read too much Adrian Moles as a kid.
Might never happen.
No, do it. Definitely do it. And then report back.
Thanks.
Sarah.
Well, I'm going to choose mine on a very arbitrary reason, but one might say that's very appropriate because of the arbitrariness of time itself. And that is Tony. I'm going to choose Tony's song, The Gay Dad, because I've never met anyone else who likes Gay Dad as much as me before. And I love that song, and it's, yeah, Dateline. And I'm going to make a Dateline all the way around my living room.
I like really hope linear, you do that.
Yeah.
Horizontal calendar.
So, there you have it. The song that best embodies calendars is A Funny Time of Year by Beth Gibbons and Rustin Man. Well done, Sarah.
Thanks.
You can hear all these songs in the accompanying Spotify playlist that you'll find at our website, therestisnoise.org. Right, you lot, make some noise. Thanks to my guests, and thank you for listening. We just have time to reveal the topic for our next episode. With Elon Musk and Tesla in the news, and the return of Star Wars and Blade Runner on the horizon, we'll be finding the perfect song to embody robots. Got an idea already? Let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or at our website.